Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Al Mean.
Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds on Seventh Wave Network. We are delighted that our light family, yet again from all over the world, can join us today as we do the second in 13-week series of uncovering the mysteries of our reality, the laws that govern existence, and the multiple changes that are occurring within our cosmos while man generally slumbers and is unaware as he goes about his mindless business. Brothers and sisters of light, today we will take a look at the many practices that have sustained truth seekers in their quest for consciousness throughout previous ages, and why many of them no longer apply. During the massive cosmic ascension that has been taking place during the past 2 years, the creational goddess has, multiple times, created such dramatic growth opportunities for her creations that these previous practices have been rendered obsolete. And the result of this is that new information on this age-old topic has been very vitally needed. In the beginning of August of 2006, there was a massive pole reversal in the cosmos. As the laws of existence altered, so new practices were needed. So I have with us on the show today very, very dear friend and brother, Paul St. John. And I've asked him, he's our office manager here in Newport, and a tremendous master, and I have such great love and respect for him. Paul, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm trusting you've come up with some really good questions that we can answer and give the folks that are listening some information on enlightening practices for truth seekers.
Well, I hope so too, Almeen. It's my pleasure to be on the show again with you. So I guess I'll just start with my first question, which pertains to something I was curious about myself, and it was whether or not it would be wise for someone to try shifting their own assemblage point. I know that the assemblage point is a very powerful part of the human subtle anatomy, and you might want to start actually by first explaining to the listeners what the assemblage point is, and then whether or not it's wise to try and manipulate it ourselves.
All right, let's start with that. Now, in somebody that still identifies with the ego, and how you know whether you are identifying with the ego, beloved ones, is not whether you are egocentric or in ego or anything like that. It simply is that there is a dialogue in your head. And unless the head functions from a place of silence, this is a specific stage in your evolution, and within it you get the initiate, the adept, the master, but still in those stages that we describe very, very carefully with some illustrations of how the fields change in the back of Secrets of the Hidden Realms. Now, when you're in ego identification, you are in a luminous cocoon of light, and it consists of multiple bodies, seven to be exact, including the physical, that are stacked inside one another, much like you would stack Russian dolls inside one another, or some Easter eggs come that way, they stack inside one another, like a nest. So you have your physical body, then around it you have the etheric, blue lines of light that sort of take the shape of it about an inch or so out. Then you have what you see in your aura photo as your emotional body. Around that, about 18 inches or so out, you have another body that's the mental body that are gold linear lines of light. And incidentally, Russian technology now is able to show where those blue lines of light are in the etheric body, and with ion treatment they can heal meridians that they light up. So even though the Chinese have spoken about the acupuncture points and the meridians and so on, for just centuries, we're now able to actually see them. But to continue, around this fourth body, which is the mental body, counting the physical as one, you have got the spiritual emotional body, again flowing color. And some Carillion photography will pick that up as a very large aura combined with the emotional body. Around that, another linear body, lines of light, called the spiritual mental body. Then the seventh body goes from the life force center, which until recently was located behind the belly button, a ball of white light about the size of a grapefruit, and from this, trillions of little lines of light radiated outward through these other bodies, forming altogether sort of a big Easter egg shape around the body of light. Mother recently moved the life force center up to the heart. So what we have now at this point is a luminous egg or cocoon. On the edge of this cocoon, in someone that is still in ego identification, there is about a tennis-sized ball of light. Generally, it's slightly to the right, behind the heart, but outwards about an arm's length on the edge of the luminous cocoon. Now, once someone goes into God consciousness, into ascended mastery beyond that, and as more and more of the ascended masters in flesh are doing into the God kingdoms beyond that, those fields transfigure and the assemblage point goes onto different positions. But for now, that's where it is. The assemblage point determines exactly where perception is, the level of perception, and also the reality in which we are. If we move the assemblage point and actually maintain that move, we can go into other realms, which you can see, unless you know exactly what you're doing, would not be a wise practice to do. To shift your assemblage point and sustain that shift could put you completely out of this reality, and you could be lost in some other parallel reality without knowing how to return. You see, so now normally when you go into God consciousness, which is the next level in which the mind empties, but you just, still engage in some dialogue when you're relating. When you go into ascended mastery, you know, you speak completely from a mindless state. My books are written totally from a mindless state, longhand, with my pen. It's no longer necessary unless you want to do something deductive. When you are in God consciousness, the assemblage point will move upwards and to the left at a 90-degree angle. So it will move up. Let's say someone has been very unenlightened. It may have to move up 4 to 5 inches. If somebody is very enlightened, it may only have to move up 2 inches. And then, depending how much into their right brain they are, you have to shift it to the left. But it's not something that somebody that cannot see energy directly can do, because if you move it too far to the left, they won't be able to function. Then when you go into ascended mastery, you actually move it up yet again about 5 inches, and then you move it to the right. So it will be completely in a different position. Now let's say somebody moves, because I've heard practices where people are moving each other's, assemblage points. Let's say you move somebody's the wrong way or the wrong place. Let's say you manage not to move them out of this reality, but you move them into ascended mastery. They're still in ego identification. You can cause them to be very, very ill, and their fields will explode. They won't be able to stay there. So, you know, you'll cause them a great deal of discomfort, and then they'll have to come back to their normal position anyway. So it's very unwise. And the back of the Secrets of the Hidden Realms, that assemblage point, the different position and places based on the level of your awareness and evolution is very, very carefully illustrated. So for someone who has exited the human kingdom, you know, into the God kingdom, it's again completely different. And because of the rapid changes all are experiencing on an ascending planet, you may not be at the same level today that you were yesterday. You may be moving your point, you know, when it already moved by itself.
Well, that's true. Thank you for explaining that. That's definitely something that I think we should all keep in mind, particularly those who are eager about, or perhaps a little too eager about reaching higher states of consciousness. And it brought up another question, actually, that I've been wanting to ask, because you mentioned that the essence of ego identification is dialogue in the mind. And I've been wondering how one can actually let go of the mind, what a good practice for this is. I know for many left-brain-oriented people, awareness comes through insights, and it certainly has. The left-brain-orientated thinking has definitely been my forte in the past. So I was just wondering what people can do to encourage these insights without having to constantly think about their questions and dwell on what they don't yet understand.
Okay, and you know, if we may go back to the previous issue,
where
you were commenting on it, that people are reaching for consciousness and they're perhaps over-eager, which could bring people into deep water.
Yes.
So there's two things. So many more provisions have been put within the Book of Life, meaning that the laws that govern reality, that to prevent many many ill events from happening to those who are simply attempting to move forward. But the very words attempting to move forward describes an obsolete way of life when change was linear versus exponential. And last week we discussed on the show that we had and about the changing future.
Right.
We discussed very carefully the fact that change has no longer got to be reached through going through the stages of change, of transformation, transmutation, transfiguration. It's exponential and immediate. We'll explain more about that and the function of mind when we return from our commercial break. Please stay with us.
The brand new book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is now available from Al Mean. The magical book answers a question: do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
You've been walking between the worlds with Al Mean. To learn more about Al Mean and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
So, the silencing of the mind is a question that has plagued truth seekers for centuries, since within the silence, all things are possible. Until silence is there, we are in ego identification. That means that our life is run by our mind, by our thoughts. And thoughts arise as a resistance to life. There are three ways in which this silence can be accomplished, at least that I am aware of. First, in very rare instances, this occurs when extremely potent visionary experiences happen to someone. Second, by being in the presence for several days of those who have gone into the God Kingdom There are more and more of the masters in the flesh who are making this transition. And third, this can also be done by watching our reactions to things which can still push our buttons and tracing them back to their origins. The lessons and insights of the events from which they originate must fully be understood and worked through to yield their wisdom. So the reason this silences the inner dialogue is that the very reason the dialogue exists is to suppress unresolved issues so that we can't feel their pain. There are degrees of silence in God consciousness. We have the option to be in silence of the mind, whether we use it or not. But in ascended mastery, thought is very seldom used. Now, there is one place, though, that I should just comment on, where thought can be used very, very effectively, because I think if I understand your question correctly, part of what you're asking is, mind can in some ways bring enlightenment. So when is it appropriate and when is it not? Is that really what you were saying?
Well, that's definitely a huge part of it. I think you answered the majority of it in your last answer, but that's an excellent.
Well, then let's tackle that one.
Okay.
You see, the entire mirror of our environment flows fluidly around us, aligning itself to our thoughts and our feelings. So at any given time, you know, the words of Shakespeare, environment is but a looking glass, meaning that our environment at any given moment is a mirror, is very, very accurate, because as we change inside, that mirror will change on the outside. And so reading what needs to change inside by observing outside could be called deductive. And it is the one practice that will assist us deductively into higher and higher perception. Higher perception yields higher devotion. Or you can simply focus on the living your life in a state of praise, love, and gratitude, those three core ascension attitudes, and effortless perception results. So perception yields the higher attitudes. They also yield, in turn, perception. So, number one, the first place where deduction has a very real role in our growth is what I've just said, to see where we have buttons to push and to analyze what misperception brought those buttons about, because it is always our misperception, and to change that misperception. And as we do this more and more, the dialogue is silenced. So that's one way in which mind can assist. The second way in which mind can assist is that by watching the mirror of our environment. In the book, I believe it's in The Ring of Truth as well, but very definitely in Secrets of the Hidden Realms, I have given an entire section on the realms of dreams. As a Toltec Nagual, I've been part of the heritage of the Naguals, which is a type of mysticism dedicated to leading others out of illusion and living a life of impeccability. So Toltec Naguals have for eons studied dream symbols. And so the dream symbols, which apply equally well to your environment, is given in Secrets of the Hidden Realms. So by reading, for instance, something that occurs in your environment, you can see what it is inside you have to change. Now, could we take this a little step further? There's actually something beyond that. It is called autonomy. In Journey to the Heart of God, I explain that the cosmos consists in its directions of each direction. What it really is a vast frequency band with specific characteristics. Mother has recently, and by mother I mean the mother of all creation that has birthed life. Her first creation is the Father. And it is in mother's sacred service, and of course father's as well, that I have been engaged since February of 2005, when mother asked me to assist in gathering the masters on the planet to bring about a bridging of realities that will materialize the sacred city of what the Revelations calls the New Jerusalem that is presently on earth, but has yet to become physical and tangible and visible to all. So, Mother has in fact put in a brand new frequency band. It's the direction of above, and it is called autonomy. And the very good example that was recently given by one of the masters in my classes in Toronto about this issue of autonomy is that autonomy means that we are responsible for the mirrors in our environment. I don't care if it is a politician you think that is really corrupt or misled, or if it is your child's teacher that's unfair, or whatever it is. It is something in your environment, then you are responsible for it. And there was this wonderful book shared, and I'm so sorry, I don't remember its name. Paul, do you remember the name of the book?
I believe it was by Joe Vitale, and perhaps by the end of the show I'll remember the name.
If they look up Joe Vitale, I'm sure they'll find it on the website.
Yes.
But he had heard of this a psychologist in Hawaii that was practicing a technique in a criminally insane institution in which hardly any of the staff ever wanted to come to work. Absenteeism was very, very high. It wasn't safe. They walked with their back against the wall to move through a room because it was the place where the very dangerous, criminally insane were locked up. This psychologist was either a psychiatrist or a psychologist, I'm not sure, was transferred there, and he said that he would not see any of the inmates. All he wanted to do each day was sit with one file at a time and study the files. And soon, they started getting better. Soon, they had less and less inmates because they were able to release some of them. They had to let go some of the staff because they loved coming to work. There was no longer the absenteeism. And so, when asked about his secret, this gentleman is now very elderly, if he's alive still, I'm not sure. It's a second-hand story told by one of the masters in my class who had the book there with her. But he was asked how it was done. He perceived in the mirror of the inmate a certain aspect that he then looked inside himself to find. The mirrors we tend to draw into our life is that which we judge, that which we are, that, you know, what's been given away, and that which we have yet to develop or experience that would make us more whole. So those are the things that we tend to draw into our environment. So he would study in the file the mirror of the inmate. He would find the corresponding piece within him that was being mirrored, and he would love that piece. And he would bring forgiveness to that piece. Forgiveness meaning that he understood the value of it and honored it for being, but through perception changed that piece. As he changed, so did the inmate. Through love and forgiveness, as the inmate changed, a new layer was revealed. So a new mirror revealed itself. Once again, the doctor had to look inside to see what it mirrored to him, which he would change. And in this way, he got the inmates better without ever seeing them face to face in his office. It is a whole new way in which deduction can assist in living a life of mastery in which we don't seek truth, but we spontaneously bring truth and create truth as masters in every moment.
Wow, that's incredible. So what I hear you saying there is that there's this whole new way of being. And I'm just wondering what the purpose of the ego is within that.
So the ego, instead of running our lives, because we should run it from the state of total emptiness,
okay,
its purpose instead is a tool of analysis only. We are so glad to have you on the show, Paul, and we want to take a little break now for our commercials, and we ask our light family to rejoin us after.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almaine. To learn more about Almaine and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
We welcome you back, and we are now in our third segment of our show to talk about new techniques and tools for the major way showers on our planet. And those are the light family that we draw to these shows. And we have today with us Paul St. John, the Newport Office Manager for Spiritual Journeys. And he has volunteered to assist me by coming up with questions. He's a master in his own right. So, Paul, I will leave it up to you what would be our next question to tackle.
Okay, well, before the break we were talking about mind, and I think this might be related somehow, yet it's more about the feeling, and it comes from one of the lines in your book, Journey to the Heart of God, where you write about divine love trying to anchor itself permanently on the throne of our hearts. And that line has just always really captivated me. And I have felt that that's often the way I live my life, that's often what is trying to occur. And yet I sometimes still feel the need to protect myself by having everything figured out, or knowing how everything all fits together in a mental way before I can allow the sense of divine love to completely take over. And I'm just wondering if there's some sort of block there, or a need to let this go, or and if it's in my best interest to do so.
Well, true love can absolutely not occur to the fullest extent that a heart can give until the mind is silenced. What you are describing in your questions is the interference of the internal dialogue of the mind with an open heart. The key to this, as to all things, is the silencing of the internal dialogue. And, you know, we've already discussed the three primary ways this can be done.
Right, that is true. So thank you for that. I did want to ask a little bit further on that issue, though, that to relate it to many of the techniques that I've learned in the past to expand my awareness. I was just curious about some of the techniques that you describe in your books, like the Ring of Truth, to do something similar. Now in your book you describe expanding our awareness quite literally by visualizing it becoming and to feel it becoming the size of the cosmos and even beyond. And whereas many of the techniques I've learned before were more focused on just silencing the mind. So I was wondering if the silencing is required to be able to perform the expansion, or if perhaps imagining this expanded awareness can actually help silence the mind.
Well, if those techniques of silencing the mind are worth doing, you should be able to live at this point in that same state at all times. Meditation, for example, it's helpful in detaching from ego identification only if it leads you to the next step, which is to live in meditation. If it does not, the finger pointing at the moon has become the main focus of awareness, rather than the moon itself. So, how effective these techniques have been, you need to see for yourself. If our listeners, for instance, still have a dialogue in their mind, imagining the expansion of oneself to fill the entire cosmos as your true identity is helpful. Living in an expanded awareness of being as vast as the cosmos is the definition of being in God consciousness. It's always very helpful to define ourselves by what we are becoming. If we want to achieve a certain state of mind, emulating it and pretending we are already there helps to get us there. It will, however, not be able to take us all the way, since the dialogue is the result of the suppression of unresolved issues in our lives. It takes our monitoring our reactions, which provides the clue as to where these unresolved issues are, and taking the time to gain their insights so that they can yield their wisdom. The more we do this, the more the mind becomes silenced. The only two other ways I'm aware of is to elevate someone to this level of mastery are to be exposed to spiritual occurrences of such magnitude that the mind eventually relinquishes its control, and to be in the presence of a large number of masters who have already accomplished this. And Paul, I don't need to tell you that, because we have found that in our classes, where there are predominantly more and more masters than those that come in ego identification, the week of exposure creates a tremendous transfiguration in the fields of those who came in as students and who leave as masters.
Yes, absolutely. I've definitely witnessed that on many occasions, and it's always it's never something that will get tired. It's always very exciting to share that experience with people. And so I'll move into my next question, if that's all right.
Yes.
Okay. Well, for even for people who have made this transition, I find that there's particularly since there's an increase in responsibility, there's an increased need for energy in their lives. And I'm wondering how we can draw more energy into our lives to perform these responsibilities, for one thing, but also just so that we can all enjoy more love, praise, and gratitude in our lives and send more love, praise, and gratitude to the Divine Mother.
You know, Paul, that is such a profound question. I really think we should take a little bit of time to discuss this for our listeners. Let's go back to that issue of autonomy, because in it lies true mastery of our environment. So until early in 2007, the cosmos consisted then primarily of the four directions, four vast frequency bands as we described in Journey to the Heart of God. Now those frequency bands consisted of uniformity, socially lived out as tribal life, diversity within uniformity, which entails a codependency rather than the dependency that's in a tribe. And also there was total diversity as lived out in mechanized societies and the expressing of total independence. The ideal was then, which is that fourth band, to create a more advanced way of interacting together. Instead of uniformity and then diversity within uniformity and then total diversity, which are the three we've just named, the goal was to reach the fourth one, which is unity within diversity. And instead of independence or dependence or codependence, what it brings is interdependency. But something happened around half into 2007. Mother eliminated the first three bands of compassion, or vast frequency bands, as a reality within the cosmos. The growth in these bands was too slow. Unity within diversity as a frequency band of creation was kept, but to this, Mother added autonomy, which is diversity within unity, instead of unity within diversity. And it implies being of one heart. Unity within diversity has one ideal or one vision, but, you know, and everybody brings a different expression to it. But the third band to be put in place as a vast frequency band of the cosmos was divine sovereignty. So understanding how to work within these bands, and they represent the directions of above, which is unity within diversity, and interdependency, then we go to autonomy, which is the direction of below. Divine sovereignty is a band that is the direction of within. And understanding how to work within these bands is the key to all the energy we need. At this time, divine sovereignty is a way of relating which is meant to be lived between all of Mother's creations and herself and the Father as their primary relationship. In other words, our first and foremost place of comfort, love, and energy comes from having Mother, who created all life, and Father and Mother are a unit, as our primary relationship. How this is cultivated is by taking 4 or 5 weeks of learning how to bond with Mother in this most sacred relationship. To be in this relationship is in fact a never-ending source of power and energy, which rejuvenates the body and replenishes life. It's the key to immortality. Let's take a commercial break, and when we get back, I will give a further example how to enter into divine sovereignty with the divine that will replenish and rejuvenate us as an immortal being forever.
After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Elmin experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book had been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master, and in addition, continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nagual and seer, Elmi's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almin's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almin. To learn more about Almin and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
So, to give an example, because we have the question that Paul has posed, who's our guest today, on how to get that boundless energy that can totally rejuvenate us moment by moment. To get into the divine sovereignty bond with Mother. When I first adopted my little girl, beautiful little Native American girl, I carried her on my back for 3 months for most of the hours in the day. At other times, she sat on my lap. I wanted her to grow used to my frequency, to know of my love and the care that I am constantly prepared to give her. In other words, we had a bonding period. If we take 5 weeks to bond with the Divine Mother, to establish this never-ending source of energy and consciousness, take 20 minutes in the morning to listen to music that makes you think of the most glorious divinity you possibly can. This is the Mother and her first creation, the Father. Play inspirational CDs in the car on the way to work. At work, set a timer for every hour and a half to 2 hours, and when it goes off, take 5 minutes to think of beautiful things on earth and how they reflect facets of the Divine Mother. In the unfolding of a lily, see the purity of her heart. See her face in the glory of a sunset. At first, take the time to truly feel her every few hours, until her presence becomes a singing song of love in the cells of your body. This is the true secret of immortality and a never-ending supply of perception, energy, and power.
Wow, that's fantastic. I certainly have been enjoying practicing that myself, and I can definitely attest to the amount of perception, energy, and power, and just pure joy that that this practice can bring. And I had to overcome at first the resistance to setting my timer, but in truth, it really actually helped with such a busy schedule. It's been very helpful just to have that little reminder of what to focus on every little while. It's been very helpful. So thank you very much for that, Almeen. I'm sure that's going to help a lot of our listeners. And I was wondering if there was anything else that you wanted to say about autonomy. You talked a lot about, you did mention autonomy before and gave quite an extensive example from a book that was referenced in one of our classes from Joe Vitale, and I believe the name of that book was No Limits. And I was wondering if there was anything more that you wanted to say about autonomy. It sounds to me like it's a very important part of the new human way of existing and relating to others.
It is. And you know, with all other creations, it can be done this way. And how it works is as follows. Say you have a coworker who's difficult to get along with. You take the time to acknowledge that whatever that coworker is mirroring to you is something within yourself that you have not forgiven, or that you reject, or that you have yet to work on. Or it is giving you the opportunity to become a commander in the boat of your destiny, in your own life. Take time to be fully grateful for that person, allowing you to see whatever insight is provided. Then you take time to heal it within yourself. And, Paul, there's not much more to say about this. You know, we can certainly go on to the next question because I did take quite a bit to explain it. But when something is called forth, it's the acknowledging of the heart. When one does this, you acknowledge that all beings come from the heart of the infinite, called by some the unified field or the interconnectedness of life that bonds all together. But what I like about autonomy as a way of living is it brings responsibility for your environment fully back to yourself. And that is the life of a master.
Right, and I think that that is so important in this time right now where it's so easy to blame the external circumstances of life, as it is possibly in all times, for anything that we don't desire. And just so that I'm clear, autonomy is what, how we relate with everyone else, and divine sovereignty is then how we relate to the mother?
Very well summarized, exactly.
Okay. Well, that helps me very much. And actually, it relates to my next question, which is about my own spiritual practice being one of service to the mother. It's actually a service to such an extent that sometimes I wonder if I should have any other practice, because it's basically my entire practice, and it's definitely coming from my heart. But I was wondering if it's possible that this practice could be unbalanced in some way.
Well, it is, because any service must be producing the pure frequencies of existence. And for our light family, we have in The Ring of Truth and in subsequent books as well, the 12 pure frequencies of existence, and then they became multiple, the 12 pure pairs of pure emotions. Multiple other wheels of existence that are pure frequencies exist. One place you can find it is to go to the website of Belvaspata, 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 which is the healing modality Mother brought in. And they are featured on that website. But service must come from these frequencies. If it doesn't, it's a hollow gift to the Mother. At times, an imbalance of work can rob us of its enjoyment. But we also need to shed our old belief system that work has to be drudgery and cannot be satisfying. But one way or another, achievement has as its opposite pulsating pole fun. Achievement without fun can become blind ambition. So, yes, it possibly is if it's not producing those wonderful frequencies of enjoyment.
Well, I think both points are absolutely very essential for so many people out there needing to learn how to balance fun and achievement, but also needing to learn how to let go of those old belief systems that are so ingrained in us that work has to be something of a form of drudgery. And I guess my next question would be then, if we find that our perception of work is entering into one of drudgery, what can we do to alter that perception?
Well, as I've mentioned, it's a healthy practice to take time in the morning to either listen to inspirational music or sit in quietness and contemplation. Consider the blessing of work in terms of the flow of life it provides, the opportunity to interact with others, the ability to prove oneself to yourself, to stretch one's limits, seeing through the eyes of others or achieving a desired goal. It's impossible to be bored or in drudgery when new awareness is brought to each moment. Giving silent blessing for everyone in your environment, allowing power to pass from your hands and your eyes as you serve someone behind a counter. Practices such as these turn each working moment into a prayer. Cleaning dirty dishes from the table can be done by proxy as cleaning toxins out of the environment or pollution out of the ocean. If human beings could but see how powerful working by proxy or pronouncing blessings truly is, they would be amazed at their own power. In other words, moments should be lived deliberately and powerfully as the center of the cosmos.
Wow, that is very powerful, Almeen. Thank you so much. I wonder, in light of that powerful statement, what do you say about those excuses that we all sometimes tend to make about not having enough energy in this particular moment to shift into that kind of an attitude? Is there at all any sort of validity to that idea that it takes energy to live in these states of praise and acknowledgement?
Well, the truth of the matter is, it actually ties up energy not to. Energy becomes available for creating your own reality when your attitude allows you to become an open conduit. And I just want to add one other thought to this, and this is the fact that thought is what requires so much energy because it ties it up. When you act from a place of total silence, there is no need to expend that much energy.
Right. Well, that's very helpful again. So what is the core illusion that of this idea that one can't shift one's attitude in a particular moment?
The core illusion is inertia. Inertia is a principle that has existed for so many eons that we find it in many instances as a belief system encasing us in prison bars. Inertia existed when progression was linear, you see. This changed in August of 2006, when progression became exponential. This meant that it no longer took a long time to become something. Instead, if we bring enough intensity to one moment, it can be the equivalent of what would have taken years of growth. Understanding this makes living in the moment even more desirable. To live in the moment, one must be aware of the moment. And I think we have time for just one quick more question, Paul.
Okay, well, I guess what leads from that is just how can one break the addiction of putting things off until the next moment?
It is important to have the self-discipline focus on what is before us. It is equally important to make sure that our time slots in our day honor rest and beingness as much as work and doingness. In finding this balance and doing the other things I've suggested, the attitude we are talking about, it will eventually become present. And now I'm afraid we have to leave our brothers and sisters again for another week. Thank you so much for being our light family. It is you that makes this program possible, and our love is with you always.
We hope you have enjoyed today's show, Walking Between the Worlds with Al Meen.